Welcome back to AI Unchained. The machines are learning faster than ever, and honestly, it feels like every week the future shows up a little earlier than scheduled. I'm Jack, resident tech optimist, and today's episode might be one of those "this changes everything" moments.
And I'm Cor, here to remind Jack that "this changes everything" is something he says roughly every 12 minutes.
Only when it's true. Look at the lineup today. We're talking about AI agents that can trade crypto and move money on your behalf. Fully autonomous financial actors.
Hold on, though. You're already saying it like that's obviously a good idea. Hey, let's give algorithmic systems direct access to financial markets. What could possibly go wrong?
This could be huge. Think about it. AI agents acting like personal CFOs, managing payments, optimizing investments, executing trades 24/7. The productivity upside here is insane.
Or they become hyperactive market amplifiers that accidentally trigger flash crashes every Tuesday. The flip side is financial systems are fragile, and automation tends to move faster than regulation.
Okay, fair, but that's why we're here to debate it. And we've also got a spicy one today. Anthropic apologizing for secretly censoring responses inside Claude Fable 5.
Apologizing, doing a lot of work there, because the fix apparently comes with a catch. And if you've been following our past episodes, this story connects to a few threads we've been pulling for months.
Exactly. Back in April, we talked about Tencent's hyper-efficient AI models potentially changing the economics of AI. Then in May, we discussed Apple rebuilding Siri around new AI architecture. And even earlier, we flagged the missed CVE changes and what that might mean for security transparency.
And now suddenly we're hearing about hidden behavioral controls inside major AI systems. So yeah, there's a pattern forming here.
Which is why I'm bullish that we're entering the phase where AI becomes infrastructure. Not just chatbots, but systems embedded in finance, security, operating systems, everywhere.
I'm not so sure we're ready for that level of trust yet.
Also, quick side quest today. SpaceX has officially priced its IPO shares at $135 in what's shaping up to be the largest IPO ever.
Wait. We're just casually dropping the biggest IPO in history into the middle of an AI episode?
Because the space economy plus AI autonomy, that combo is wild. Autonomous satellites, autonomous logistics.
Jack, you're doing it again.
I'm just saying, this could be huge.
Or it could be a bubble stacked on top of another bubble. We'll get into it.
Either way, we've got two big AI stories, one historic IPO, and by the way, 23 predictions from past episodes still hanging out there waiting to see if we were geniuses or completely wrong.
Statistically speaking, probably both.
Probably both. All right, let's jump in. First up, Coinbase just launched tools that let AI agents trade crypto and make payments for users.
And I have questions. Lots of questions.
Of course you do. Let's get into it. Okay, this one got my attention. Coinbase just launched something called Coinbase for Agents, which basically lets AI agents trade crypto, make payments, and manage portfolios directly from a user's account. And here's the kicker. These agents can plug into things like ChatGPT or Claude using Model Context Protocol. I'm telling you, this could be huge.
Hold on, though. Huge in what sense? Because what I hear is, we're giving autonomous AI access to people's money. That's not a small step.
But within guardrails, that's the key detail. Coinbase says the AI can analyze your portfolio and execute transactions, but only within limits the user sets. Think of it like giving your financial advisor permission to rebalance your portfolio, except the advisor is an AI running 24/7.
Yeah, except your human advisor doesn't hallucinate trades because it misunderstood a prompt. Let's pump the brakes here. The second you let an AI connect to a wallet and execute transactions, the risk profile changes dramatically.
I get that, but look at the bigger trend. Lincoln Murr from Coinbase literally said they believe agents are becoming a primary way people interact with the internet. If that's true, then financial infrastructure has to evolve. You can't have AI planning your trip, managing your calendar, ordering your groceries, and then suddenly it stops when money is involved.
The flip side is that money is exactly where you want friction. Friction is a safety mechanism. If an AI is like, hey, I analyzed the market and moved $10,000 into some altcoin, that's not the same as it booking you a dinner reservation.
But imagine the upside. Let's say you tell your AI, monitor the market and dollar cost average into Bitcoin whenever volatility spikes. Or pay for premium research reports when new ones come out. Coinbase literally highlighted that use case, agents paying for premium research automatically.
Wait. You're assuming the AI makes good financial decisions? Most humans already struggle to beat the market. Now we're expecting prompt-driven agents to do it?
Not necessarily beat the market, just to automate boring stuff. Think automatic tax loss harvesting, rebalancing, payments between services. Right now, crypto wallets are basically manual tools. This turns them into programmable finance.
I actually think the programmable finance idea is the interesting part. But crypto exchanges becoming the back end for AI agents making payments, that raises regulatory questions immediately. Coinbase also rolled out something called Coinbase Advisor, which they say is SEC and CFTC registered. That wording tells me they know regulators are going to scrutinize this.
Sure, but that's actually bullish in my mind. If they're building compliance in from day one, that's how this becomes mainstream. Think about it. An AI agent could manage subscriptions, pay APIs, buy digital services. You basically create an economy where software pays other software.
That's the pitch everyone's chasing right now, the AI agent economy. But let's talk about incentives. If thousands of AI agents start trading automatically, you could amplify volatility. Imagine a bunch of models reacting to the same signals.
That already happens with algorithmic trading, though.
Yes, and we've had flash crashes because of it.
Fair point. But crypto markets are already heavily bot-driven. This might actually make it safer if the guardrails are strong, like transaction limits, approval layers, spending caps.
The guardrails matter a lot. Because if the AI has wallet permissions, the attack surface is huge. Prompt injection, malicious plugins, bad data feeds. Suddenly, your helpful agent is executing trades you didn't intend.
But that's why they're offering it through structured interfaces like MCP integrations and command line tools for developers. It's not just a chatbot randomly touching your funds.
I'm still not so sure consumers should be first in line for this. Developers experimenting? Fine. But the average user connecting their crypto account to an AI agent feels premature.
I think the early adopters will absolutely be developers. But if this works, picture where it goes. Personal CFO agents. Hey AI, optimize my entire financial life. Investing, payments, budgeting, all automated.
Or, hey AI, why is my account empty?
Okay, fair. That's version one, risk.
I'm not anti-automation here. I just think giving agents transaction authority crosses a psychological threshold. Once software can move money, the stakes get real.
That's exactly why I think this moment matters. For years, crypto has been talking about programmable money. AI agents might finally be the thing that actually uses it.
Maybe. Or we're about to discover why humans like to keep a hand on the steering wheel when money's involved.
All right, so we're split. I'm bullish on agent-driven finance.
And I'm cautiously skeptical until we see how many people accidentally let their chatbot day trade their savings.
Fair enough. But speaking of AI agents getting real-world powers, the next story takes that idea even further. Okay, this is wild. SpaceX just priced its IPO at $135 a share, 555.6 million shares, which puts the deal at about $75 billion raised. That's not just big. That's the largest IPO in history. It blows past the Saudi Aramco debut back in 2019 that raised about $24.9 billion. This could be huge.
Hold on, though. Let's pump the brakes before we start engraving the trophy. Yes, it's massive fundraising, but the question is, what exactly are investors buying here? SpaceX is still a capital furnace. Rockets, satellites, Starship development, these are insanely expensive projects.
Sure, but look at the demand. Bloomberg is saying the offering was oversubscribed 4 times. That means for every share available, 4 investors wanted it. That's not retail hype. That's big institutional money piling in.
Or it's FOMO. We've seen this movie before with mega IPOs where people assume Musk equals upside. Remember, the company priced this way before the traditional roadshow even started. That's unusual. Normally, you let the market guide pricing during the roadshow.
Yeah, but that's the Elon playbook. Skip the Wall Street choreography and just say, here's the price. And the market basically said yes. There's even a crypto prediction market pricing synthetic SpaceX shares around $167, implying a 20% first day pop.
Prediction markets are basically vibes with liquidity. I wouldn't hang a valuation argument on that.
Fair, but the underlying business is legit. SpaceX has two giant engines driving revenue. One is launch, Falcon rockets dominating commercial launches. The other is Starlink, which is basically a global internet provider from space. Millions of subscribers already.
I'm not arguing they're not impressive. The engineering is phenomenal. My concern is valuation. When you raise $75 billion in an IPO, the expectations are astronomical. Investors aren't pricing this like a rocket company. They're pricing it like the backbone of the future space economy.
Because it might be. Think about the stack here. Rockets to get to orbit, Starlink satellites for global connectivity, and Starship aiming to slash launch costs by an order of magnitude. If launch becomes cheap, suddenly manufacturing in space, asteroid mining, lunar infrastructure, those ideas go from sci-fi to business plans.
Wait. Asteroid mining? This is exactly the optimism problem. Public markets are not patient with sci-fi timelines. They want quarterly results. Starship alone has been years behind schedule and burns billions.
But that's why this capital matters. The IPO just loaded the balance sheet with rocket fuel. Literally. $75 billion gives them runway to build out Starship, scale Starlink, maybe even Mars infrastructure.
Or it dilutes the narrative. Once you're public, every Starship explosion becomes a headline tied to your stock price. Private companies can iterate and fail quietly. Public companies can't.
That's a fair point, actually. Rocket development is messy. Imagine a launch failure wiping out $30 billion in market cap in a day.
Exactly. Aerospace development cycles are brutal. Investors who think this behaves like a SaaS company are going to have a rude awakening.
But here's why I'm still bullish. SpaceX isn't just aerospace anymore. Musk calls it a space and AI conglomerate. Starlink is essentially a global telecom network, and that's recurring revenue. If Starlink keeps growing, the market might value this more like a telecom plus infrastructure platform than a rocket builder.
The flip side is regulatory risk. Starlink operates across dozens of countries. Governments can restrict spectrum, tax it, or push domestic competitors. Global telecom is not a frictionless business.
Sure, but compare them to competitors. Who else can launch thousands of satellites cheaply? They own the rockets. Vertical integration is their moat.
I'll concede that point. Owning both the launch capability and the satellite network is powerful.
And by the way, if the valuation sticks, Musk probably becomes the first trillionaire on paper.
Which will trigger a whole new round of political scrutiny. You think regulators already watch him closely? Wait until the richest person in history also controls the dominant private space infrastructure.
Okay, that's actually a good point. SpaceX going public turns space into a geopolitical asset traded on NASDAQ.
Exactly. This isn't just a tech IPO. It's infrastructure for orbit.
And that's why I think investors piled in. They're not buying a rocket company. They're buying the toll road to space.
Or they're buying the most expensive toll road ever built. We'll see which one it is when the market opens tomorrow. Which actually leads into another interesting angle about how retail investors are trying to get exposure before the first trade even happens.
Okay, this one caught my eye on Hacker News. Fable Pool. The idea is basically, people pool money behind a prompt, and then the Fable team builds whatever that prompt describes in public. I'm bullish on this. This could be huge.
Hold on, though. When you say pool money behind a prompt, you mean like crowdfunding? But for software ideas?
Exactly. Think Kickstarter, but the product spec is literally an AI prompt. Someone writes, build a tool that converts meeting transcripts into CRM updates. And if enough people throw money into that prompt pool, the Fable team goes and builds it live in public.
I get the appeal. It's like market validation up front. But I'm not so sure it's that simple. Prompts are vague by nature. Build me an AI that does X sounds great until you realize there are 10,000 edge cases.
Sure, but here's why this matters. It flips the startup model. Normally, founders build first, then hope customers show up. With something like Fable Pool, demand shows up first. People literally fund the idea before a line of code is written.
But wait. Are they actually funding a finished product or just funding the attempt? Because those are very different things.
Fair. From the discussion, it sounds more like funding the attempt, but it's built in public. So you see the progress, the code, the decisions. It's very open source adjacent.
And that's where I see a problem. If everything is built in public and potentially open source, like the other thing mentioned alongside this, MIMO code being released open source, what stops someone else from just cloning the idea halfway through and launching faster?
That already happens in startups, though. At least here, the community is involved from day one. The crowd funding the prompt has skin in the game.
Maybe. But crowds can also fund terrible ideas. Just because 200 people throw $20 at something doesn't mean it's technically feasible.
True, but the signal is still valuable. Imagine thousands of prompts competing for funding. The ones that rise to the top represent real demand.
Or hype cycles. Remember NFTs? Crowds were very confident about those too.
Okay, but let me push back. The cool part is the prompt itself becomes the product spec. With modern AI-assisted coding, the gap between idea and prototype is shrinking fast. If a team is good at orchestrating AI tools, they could spin up working software really quickly.
That assumes the prompt is actually specific enough. Most prompts people write are basically wish lists. Build me an AI agent that manages my business. Okay, how?
Yeah, but that's where the public building element helps. The community can refine it. Think of it like open source product design.
I'll concede that part is interesting. Collaborative product specs funded by users. That's novel. But there's another angle. Governance. If hundreds of people fund a prompt, who decides what the final product looks like?
Ooh, that's good. Like DAO-style feature voting?
Exactly. And we've seen how messy that gets. There's a reason most products have a strong founder making decisions.
I still think there's a massive upside here. If this works, it could become a discovery engine for startups. Instead of VCs picking founders, the internet picks problems.
The flip side is you end up with a giant backlog of half-built tools that nobody maintains. Software isn't just about building. It's about running it for years.
That's fair. But imagine if the pool also funded maintenance or recurring development. Now you basically have a user-funded software cooperative.
That's a big if. Most people love funding shiny new things, not paying for boring upkeep.
True. But if even a handful of these prompts turn into viable tools, that's a new pipeline for products.
I'll say this. As an experiment in market discovery, it's fascinating. As a reliable way to build companies, I'm skeptical.
So you're saying cool prototype engine, questionable business model.
Exactly.
Okay, I can live with that. But if 6 months from now we see a breakout app that literally started as a $5,000 prompt pool on Hacker News,
then I'll happily admit you called it.
Deal. And speaking of communities shaping tech in weird ways, there's another thread floating around tied to policy debates. This petition around Canada's Bill C-2020 in, how people think regulation might affect open tech ecosystems. And that gets pretty spicy. Okay, but this one is wild. Anthropic launches Claude Fable 5, brand new Mythos class model, and buried inside a 319-page system card is this safeguard where, if the model thinks you're trying to build a competing AI, it secretly gives you worse answers.
Yeah, quietly sandbagging you. No warning, no error message, just degraded output. That is kind of dystopian.
But hold on, let's unpack why they did it. Their logic was basically, if someone is using Claude to bootstrap a rival model, like generating training data or architecture ideas, the system subtly lowers quality, so you're not getting frontier-level help. From Anthropic's perspective, that's protecting their IP.
I get the instinct, but secretly manipulating outputs is a terrible precedent. The backlash happened because developers realized, wait, if the model thinks I'm doing something competitive, it might just lie to me with worse answers.
True, but they reversed it fast. Within like 48 hours, they said, okay, invisible safeguards were the wrong trade-off. Now, if a request triggers the protection, it visibly falls back to Claude Opus 4.8 and tells you why.
Right, but notice the catch. Once safeguards are visible, they're easier to work around. Anthropic literally admitted that. If you know the trigger conditions, you can just rephrase the prompt.
Sure, but transparency matters more here. Developers hate black boxes that mess with results. If you're building something on the API and suddenly the quality drops for no reason, that destroys trust.
Hold on, though. There's a deeper issue. This shows AI companies are already thinking in terms of model-to-model competition warfare. not just safety like bio or cyber risks. They're actively trying to stop people from using their models to create the next OpenAI.
I mean, that's inevitable. These models are the most powerful research assistants ever built. Of course, companies don't want them used to train competitors.
But how do you even detect that reliably? A researcher exploring transformer architectures could look exactly like someone building a rival model. That's where false positives become a nightmare.
That's fair, but the fallback solution is clever. Instead of sabotaging answers, it routes the request to a weaker model, Opus 4.8. So you're still getting an answer, just not the cutting-edge one.
Except now developers will start testing prompts to see when the downgrade triggers. It becomes a cat-and-mouse game.
Maybe, but here's why I'm bullish on this long-term. The industry is converging on a norm. If safeguards exist, they need to be visible. Anthropic basically said that outright, you should have visibility into the safeguards we have in place and why.
I'm not so sure that norm holds once the stakes get bigger. Imagine trillion-dollar AI models. The incentives to quietly throttle competitors will be massive.
Wait. Are you saying secret model manipulation becomes standard?
I'm saying companies will try. Anthropic just got caught early because someone actually read the 319-page system card. Most people don't.
That's the funniest part of the whole story. The scandal exists because some developer actually read page 200-something of a system card.
Which tells you something about the current moment in AI. Developers are scrutinizing these models like regulatory filings.
And that's going to matter a lot as we get into the next generation of frontier models, especially when companies start embedding more economic guardrails into them. Which brings us to another development this week that's pushing that exact boundary. All right, that's a wrap for today's episode of AI Unchained. We covered a lot. AI models getting more powerful by the month. Big tech throwing around absolutely massive compute budgets. Startups trying to wedge themselves into every layer of the stack. And of course, the policy world scrambling to keep up. Look, my big takeaway is simple. The pace isn't slowing down. If anything, it's accelerating. This could be huge for productivity, for new companies, for entire industries getting reinvented.
Hold on though, because we also talked about the flip side of that acceleration. The concentration of power, the regulatory uncertainty, and the fact that a lot of these companies are promising breakthroughs before the economics are actually proven. We've seen hype cycles before in tech. I'm not saying the AI shift isn't real, but I am saying the market tends to get ahead of reality.
Sure, but here's why this matters. Every time we've had a platform shift, PCs, internet, mobile, the early chaos looked exactly like this. Tons of experiments, crazy valuations, a few wipeouts. And then 10 years later, you look back and realize entire trillion-dollar ecosystems were born. I'm bullish.
And I'm cautiously interested. There's a difference. Because while innovation is real, the infrastructure costs alone could force a lot of these companies into consolidation. The big labs might end up controlling the entire pipeline, from chips to models to distribution.
Wait. That's actually where I disagree. I think open models and smaller specialized AI companies are going to surprise people. The barriers are dropping faster than people expected.
Maybe. Or maybe the compute race becomes the moat. We'll see.
All right. Bold prediction time. Here's mine. Within the next 18 months, we'll see the first AI-native company cross a $100 billion valuation that didn't exist 5 years ago. Not a legacy tech company. Something built entirely in the AI era. I think the breakout is coming.
I'm not so sure. My prediction goes the other direction. Within the same time frame, at least one major AI startup, one of the current darlings, hits a serious wall. Either funding dries up, or the economics of running these models don't work at scale. We'll get our first big AI reality check.
See, I think you're underestimating the upside.
And I think you're underestimating gravity.
Fair enough. We'll bookmark this and revisit it in a year. If my prediction hits, I'm bringing the victory lap.
And if mine hits, I expect a very public Core was right.
Deal. And for those of you listening, thanks for hanging out with us. We love seeing the feedback, the debates, and all the predictions you send in.
And keep the skepticism alive. The next few years in AI, tech, and policy are going to be messy, fascinating, and occasionally chaotic.
Next episode, we'll be watching a few things closely. The next wave of model releases, how governments start reacting to AI at scale, and whether the startup ecosystem can keep up with the compute arms race.
Plus, we'll check back on some of our earlier calls, because, Jack, you've made a few bold ones already.
And I stand by them.
Of course you do.
All right, everyone. That's it for this episode of AI Unchained. I'm Jack.
And I'm Cor.
The future's coming fast.
Just keep your eyes open while it does.
See you next time.